All right, so we're off and running. We now have been in Acts. As you guys know, now the theme of the book, of course, is the message of God. And this is the thing that permeates the book, the whole account of what the apostles did after the resurrection of the Lord Jesus Christ. And obviously, the message of God is pertinent, as we just talked about. It's the thing that changes all life for people all over the world, regardless of where they are. It had the power to do it then, and it has the power to do it today. And so we're going to go back into it now after our couple-week journey of being out of the book of Acts, even though we jumped off in Acts, and looking at how important the significance is of not losing track of creation in its relationship to salvation, and why it is so significant. Because without understanding creation and all of the stuff that goes along with that, then salvation really doesn't have much of a meaning. It's not until you understand creation and what happened to creation that salvation becomes an important part. And that's why we looked at all of those verses, not only in the Old Testament, but in the New Testament, as Paul was out there evangelizing and sharing the gospel with these people, that he would constantly, repeatedly, consistently go back to the creation. Because it is very significant. And sadly, we in our day, because of ridicule and opposition and even hostility in some cases to what we believe, we have let that slip from our pulpits. And to our detriment, I might say. And the church has suffered greatly for it as a whole. So we need to make sure that we maintain consistency. Now, as Paul has been ministering there in Lystra and took the time to share with those folks who had thought he was a god, remember the whole thing? And he brought them right back to the account of Genesis and creation to show them that he wasn't, that there was only one God, and that everything else is made by him, for him, through him, and so on and so forth. And having spoken these things, even at that point, the people in Lystra were still not willing to accept that he was not, in fact, Apollos or Hermes, the messenger of Zeus, and so they wanted to sacrifice a bull. Now, some time has elapsed from that period of time. We don't know how long it is, but what we do know is where the verses that we're going to pick up with here this morning are going to tell us that there's going to be some visitors from Judaism who were at least 100 miles away. So obviously, some time from that encounter with the priest and the being called gods and so on, some time has obviously elapsed. And probably because they denied that they were these gods, and the whole town had come up to worship them and to offer a sacrifice, and now everybody just kind of has to go home, droopy-lipped, because the sacrifice isn't going to end. Man, we really thought we had a god in town, and you get the idea. And my, how things have changed. Because when we start into the verses today, we're going to see that those same guys that opposed Paul and Barnabas in all of those other cities leading up to this point are once again going to rear their ugly heads, and they're going to try to shut the gospel down again. Because they cannot allow the message of truth to permeate the world. Because it will do away with all religion. And will, because it brings people right to the cross. And you, if you're in Judaism or any other religion for that matter, you cannot tolerate Christianity. It's just that simple. You can't. Because it goes against everything that your particular religion believes. Because within Christianity, biblical Christianity, it's simply about faith, it's about grace, and it's about the love of God who has done all of this simply by virtue of who he is. All right, so that's where we are, and that's what's going to bring us to the point. Now, you're going to notice as we click onto the next slide, there's a bit of a change that's taken place. As I think most of you know, the message is now being translated into Spanish as you speak. That's why all those people are over there with all the headphones on. They're not listening to their crazy rock and roll. They're listening to me in a different language. And so rather than just having to listen to the translation, I thought what we would do was start putting the verses translated up. And so there you go. Now, just in case anyone is confused, it's the one on the left that most of us understand. Okay? I thought about really trying to identify it. Marie and I looked at it last night. I put it in a couple of different formats and tried to figure out which would be the easiest for me to not get messed up here and get confused, because, as we all know, that happens occasionally, and that happens quite easily. So I just decided this was the format to do. So if you're speaking English, you're reading on the right. Okay? Am I backwards from you guys? Yeah, I think I am. You're on the right. If you're a Spanish reader, you're going to read the left. So please, okay, all right, I'm going to turn around and do this the right way. So if you're English, you're on the left. If you're Spanish, you're on the right. please avoid stepping out of your box at all costs. There's enough confusion here this morning. All right. So let's begin. So now this is Paul. This is what's happened. Paul has settled the dust. Everybody, like we said, is bummed. They find out he's not Apollos. But word has made it to the Jews 100 miles away from the city of Iconium and so on and so forth that Paul has already visited. And there they have heard this. And you can see how this just adds fuel to the fire of their hatred for him already. What you mean? You know, see, they're not going to listen to reason. Oh, now Paul and Barnabas are out there with the gospel of Jesus Christ. And now they're even allowing themselves to be called gods. You see, that's what they would have heard. And this is what would have angered them, and this is why they would have stomped 100 miles to get there to do this. Because, and the reason we're going to see what happened here is what they would, what you would expect from somebody who is guilty of blasphemy. So we start here in chapter 14, verse 19. Then Jews came from Antioch and Iconium. So these are places that we've already seen. We're going to look at the map here again in a few minutes, so don't worry about that. But these are places that Paul had already ministered in. He had brought the gospel in there, but as Paul always did, that he would enter into the Jewish synagogue at first, and he would try to reason with them from the scriptures. And of course, we know that to be the Old Testament. And of course, there would be those that would respond to this and say, wow, we're seeing the prophets fulfilled in what this guy is saying. But there were others, obviously, who didn't want to hear it and would not tolerate it and would reject and rebel against it. And of course, this would ultimately lead to great hostility. And when we get to chapter 15, we're going to see that he was even causing problems in the church. Okay, this Jew-Gentile thing. So these guys have been hostile to Paul already, and now the, you know, this is the final straw. They can't take it any longer. He cannot possibly allow himself to be called a Greek god. See, this would have been the way they would have thought it. Now we know that that's exactly opposite of what Paul said, but that's not how they would have heard it, because you see, they wanted to hear this, because this just gave them an excuse to finally put this guy out. Okay, and so having persuaded the multitudes, now that's the same multitudes that before had run up to Paul and Barnabas because of the healing of the man, had listened to Paul, had listened to the message on creation that we talked about before he brought it to the cross. They would have all this, and many of them had responded. We're going to see that group in a few minutes, but obviously many of them were just like, oh, here we go again, and had gone home. And now all of a sudden these Jews show up some, you know, 3 or 4 months later, probably is about the time that it would have been elapsed here, and they show up, and once again, they're out there with the crowds, and the multitudes now are being persuaded exactly opposite of what they thought they had seen before. My, the mob is fickle, isn't it? It doesn't take much to get mob rule. All it takes is somebody who's eloquent in speech, somebody who seems to have the answer to everybody's dilemma, and just, you know, to just let everybody just go nuts and just sort of, you know, let their emotions go. Because we're going to see that this gets really out of hand, obviously, which would lead to what I believe was the death of Paul. But we'll be talking about this. And so you know, this is just the ability to respond to something out of pure hatred and aggression, because it just feels good to do that, especially when there's someone who's smaller and weaker than you are and picking on them. So the multitudes now have turned. Now we know that many have become believers out of this, but obviously many had not. And so these guys coming from these places had persuaded the multitudes. They had persuaded them, probably, we don't know, we're not told, but probably that Paul was claiming to be what he never should have been. And this Jesus that he was teaching is not the answer that you're looking for. In fact, it's the God of Israel and so on. You can just hear it, what was going on. But either way, they persuaded them. Now notice what happened. And they stoned Paul and they dragged him out of the city, supposing him to be dead. Now here's what's interesting about this. There were no Jews in Lystra. Remember that. There were no synagogues. That's why it's significant that these guys, there probably would be one after this point, but that's why these guys had to come there, because there were no Jews there. Paul found an entirely Gentile audience when he got to this place. They had no reference point to look at from the scriptures. They didn't understand a one God system. They didn't understand any of these things. They were completely ignorant of this. Okay? And now all of a sudden you've got Paul and Barnabas coming in, thinking they're gods, finding out they're not gods, and they're preaching Jesus. And now you got these other religious people coming in and telling you that everything that those first guys did was nuts. And so the crowd is just easily swayed. And it's so hostile here that these guys actually within the city limits stone Paul to death. Now, I can assure you that when you read commentators on this, everybody wants to has their opinion about this and wants to argue about this. And some of them say, well, you know, Paul really wasn't dead here. He just got a big knock on the head and it knocked him unconscious, and so they dragged him out of the city. Are you reading the same book I'm reading? Because that's nuts. Others say, well, he was just badly bruised and probably was in some sort of a coma at this time. And so they dragged him out. No, what does it say? They supposed him to be dead. These were not people that were new to stoning people. They know when the body ceases to function. There's no pulse. There's no respiration. If you're unconscious, if you're in a coma, even if these things are lowered, they're still there. They can still be traced. These guys thought he was dead. They thought that they had accomplished their purpose. And to add insult to injury, they drag him. That would be what they presumed was his corpse, and probably was. And they drag him out of the city and they just throw him out there. Why would they do that if he was just unconscious or just in a coma? They thought he was dead, and so they were going to throw his body out as a Jew. This was the ultimate offense, and throw him out to let his body be consumed by the dogs, the wild dogs, and the wild animals in the area. This was, they were so disgusted with him. Now, you're not going to throw somebody outside the city unless you think he's dead, and that's exactly what it says. They anticipated that they had succeeded in their mission of ending this usurper's life, that he would no longer be a thorn in the flesh with this crazy message about Jesus, this Jesus of Nazareth being the Messiah, the one that all of the prophets spoke about. We know he couldn't be the Messiah. He didn't come in power and kingdom, and he didn't conquer the Roman Empire. He came as a servant. He came, we don't even know who his father was. You know, on and on it would go. So at this point, they think that they have accomplished their purpose. They think that they have ended the ordeal. And so we're not told, but obviously they departed. Now, why would they depart? Because we're going to find these guys later on. Why would they depart? Because they had done something in Roman territory that they had no right to do. They didn't have the authority to do this. They were in a Roman province. And so their lives are now in jeopardy for taking what they thought was taking the life of this other person. So you see, you got to beat feet and get out of Dodge. And that's what's happening here. Now, what's interesting about this is who's missing? Where is Barnabas? Where is Barnabas in all this? Now, we can only speculate. The scripture simply does not tell us. But I think that we already know that when they got there and they healed that man at the gate, remember, and brought healing to him and he jumped up and stuff, that they thought that Barnabas was Zeus. Remember? And they thought that Paul, because Paul was the one speaking, he was the one that gave the message, he was the one that spoke about creation, he was the one that was very vocal in all of this stuff. So he would be the logical one to target. And after all, we're just not really sure yet whether that little short bald guy is Zeus. So we're not going to mess with Zeus because he may bring it down. Now, totally speculation. We simply don't know. We know some time elapsed. It is possible that Barnabas had been elsewhere. Simply, he wasn't there at the time that this incident took place. We just don't know. But whatever the case was, he shows up again because of what's going to happen next. So, however, when the disciples gather around him, now remember, picture this, they have stoned him in the city, they've accused him of blasphemy, they've got the multitudes behind them, they think that they've killed him, they drag his corpse outside, and as they throw it outside, notice what happens. However, the disciples gather around him. That's how we know that the ministry of Paul and Barnabas within the gate, within the city of Lystra had been successful. There's disciples. Now, these guys had gathered around him, probably for a couple of reasons. Obviously, they thought that the one who had brought them the truth was now dead. So there's no doubt that they circled him to pray for him. There's no question in that. We're not told how many it was. All we know is there was more than one. Could have been a very large group for all we know. We simply don't know. And surely they circled around him to pray for him and for the Lord to receive his soul, much like Stephen had prayed, Lord, receive my soul, receive my spirit, remember? So there was surely prayers that were going on like this. But they were also, they would have circled to keep the animals away. Because remember, they thought he was a corpse. You see? And they had obviously fallen in love with Paul. He was their mentor. He was their teacher. And in that period of time, since he had first presented the message, he had no doubt sat down with them and pastored them and shepherded them and explained to them the truths of God. They didn't have a word to read. They didn't have a Bible. They didn't even have an Old Testament in Lystra. Remember, there was no Jews there. They didn't have anything. It was all on what Paul was sharing with them. And it obviously made a big impact. Well, how do we know? Because do you know who some of the disciples are that are gathered around here? Fellow about 14 to 15 year old at this time. A young guy by the name of Timothy. Paul would later speak of this particular incident. And he would tell Timothy, remind Timothy of the hardship of ministry. And he'd say, remember that time when I was stoned? And all of the scars that I bear and so on. He would say the same thing in Corinthians. But he would remind Timothy of this. He would remind him of this encounter. There's another fellow from this place. Well, actually, he's going to be from the next city, so I don't want to bring him in yet. Sorry about that. Got my guys confused. But this is where Timothy and his mother Eunice, his grandmother Lois, I might have this backwards, but you get the idea. His family was in this, and clearly they were part of the disciples that were standing around. And of course, some of the commentators say, well, we know that Paul wasn't dead, so they were probably wiping off his wounds and fixing his fractures and so on and so forth and stuff like that. What happened to the rest of the verse? As they gathered around, he rose up and he went into the city. My, how things change when God gets involved. This wasn't because somebody had given him some meds and had fixed some fractures and put some stuff on some bruises and stuff. Something has taken place, though. For whatever reason, the Spirit and Luke himself decided it wasn't important. All they wanted us to know is Paul's going to continue with his mission, regardless of what this hostility was. Now, there are some that believe that in 2 Corinthians, in chapter 11, Paul again talks about this stoning. This was the time that he was stoned that he talks about there. And then he gets into chapter 12 and he talks about how he said, I don't know whether I was in the spirit or I was in the flesh. I have no way of knowing. It really doesn't matter. But what I do know is that I showed up in the presence of God. This is the third heaven deal. This is where all of that comes in. Now, some say that may have taken place from this encounter, while Paul was dead, this is when he entered that. But the timing doesn't seem to be right. It seems like another encounter that Paul had, maybe with some belief that he had a really severe case of malaria, which would have been earlier on, and that's what he was speaking of. It really doesn't matter. I don't care. It doesn't matter to me. What I do know is that these guys who knew expected him to be dead and thought he was dead. And so the disciples gather around him for whatever the reason. And all of a sudden, like the man laying at the gate, Paul is once again on his feet and he's headed out for ministry. Because when God restores completely, does he not? Yes, he does. There's no waiting or time lag or anything like that to take place. He does what is necessary. Now, why God heals some and doesn't heal others is known only by God. Some of us here have experienced immediate healing from the Lord, which is beyond comprehension. You have, you know that. Others, you continue to pray for healing, not only for yourself, but maybe for others. And it hasn't happened yet. And the question always gets asked, why? Why is God doing this? Why is God allowing this? Because he has a purpose. It's that simple. Well, I don't understand. Well, you don't have to understand. He's God, you're not. You're just going to have to deal with it. But in this case, it's clear why God does whatever it is that God has done here. Because Paul's ministry is not finished. And nobody's stopping it. Not the Jews, not Lucifer himself. Nobody's stopping this man's ministry. This is just his first missionary journey. He's got two more to make and then a journey to Rome to take the gospel around. God said, no, I don't think so. Paul, on your feet. Continue to march. I love that about this passage. So he rose up and he went back into the city. Now, let me get this straight. Didn't you just like really have a bad experience in that city? You know, it would seem common sense to me to avoid at all costs that city. Like you English speakers, stay out of that other box. Avoid it. That's what I would have done if I was Paul. It's like, no, man, I ain't going back in there. Where's the next city? That's what I'm doing. But whatever the reason, Paul goes back into the city. Now, I would think if you were, you know, treated this way and thrown in the dust and, and probably had died and you know you respond, I guess it's the, why not go back into the city? You know, what are they going to do to you? You know? So who knows? But I love this. So they went back into the city, and the next day, and here's Barnabas again, he departed with Barnabas and he went to the final city on their journey out. And remember, we're still on their journey out on this missionary trip, what we call the first missionary journey. And they go to this place called Derbe. Whoops. There we go. And when they had preached the gospel to that city and made many disciples. You see, that stoning, being horizontal, being expected to be dead, and everybody doing this, you would think that this would have sort of slowed down the progress of what Paul and Barnabas were doing, but no way. And yet here we find ourselves in America, and a little bit of pressure is applied to the church, and we bend like a reed in the wind. Because the government says we can't do this. The government says we can't say that. Or there are those that are hostile to us. And we don't want to, you know, make any waves. And yet, here's what's happening. Look at where this is taking place in the midst of persecution that you and I will never understand. Our brothers and sisters around the world already know this. They don't need to read this. They already know this because it's happening to them as we speak. So when they had preached the gospel in the cities and made many disciples. Now this is that other guy I was getting to. His name is Gaius. And he's going to play a pivotal role because in the 20th chapter, there's going to be, as there's ministry going out among the Gentiles, there's a famine that takes place in the city of Jerusalem where the church began, where it all started. And the Gentile believers are concerned about the church in Jerusalem, and so they take up an offering to help the church financially and certainly prayerfully, obviously. And as they take up this offering, as they collect it from the churches, they send it by a bunch of different guys. One of those guys is a fellow by the name of Gaius of Derbe. This is where he comes from. This is where his salvation initiated, that actually moved into sanctification, because the guy was living out his faith. And he was in a city right next door to the one that thought it had killed Paul and solved the Paul problem. Now notice what's happening. So when they had preached the gospel of that city and made many disciples, they returned to Lystra, Iconium, and Antioch. Once again, what are you thinking? Why would you do this? You already know the hostility and the opposition that exists there. Why would you go in there? I believe because of what the verses that we're going to read, the first time Paul went on his way out till he reached that furthest point, Derbe, the message was evangelism. They were sharing the faith. They were sharing the gospel. And so they would go to the synagogues, those cities that had them at least, and they would go to the crowds and they would preach and the Lord would do these miracles. You see, it was evangelistic in its nature. It was drawing people, even though we don't know how many, it was drawing them to the gospel. But now they're on the return trip, and evangelism is no longer the necessity of Paul and Barnabas. Because you see, that's the priority now for the churches that are established. They are now to continue evangelizing. Paul's ministry now has morphed from evangelism going out to now discipleship on his return. Okay, go out sharing the gospel, get to the farthest place. Remember, God had sent them from the church in Antioch. We're going to talk a little bit more about that in a minute. But that church, they had prayed and they had fasted, and the Holy Spirit had said, set apart Paul and Barnabas for a work that I've called them to. Remember back in chapter 13? This is the work they were called to. So I think when they went out on the evangelism, as they come back, you see, they're not going into the thoroughfares of the city. They're now meeting with the brethren. So as far as city officials are going, even maybe the Jews in these places, you know, even though they're irritating, they're not really causing a ruckus. You know, we just don't know. But we do know what their ministry was. So they made many disciples in Derbe, and they returned to Lystra, Iconium, and Antioch. Why? To strengthening the souls of the disciples and exhorting them to continue in the faith, not as followers of Paul and Barnabas. They were strengthened and encouraged to remain steadfast in the faith. The faith that you know within you is real. Now this is staggering when you stop and think about it. These people do not have Bibles. They don't have PowerPoint with a Spanish box and an English box. Okay? They don't have any of these things. They don't even have a pastor. appointed yet. In fact, pastors are not going to come into play until later. Elders were the initial ones to overrule and oversee the church. And that's what we're getting to here. But notice what's happening. They've gone out. Period of time has gone. This whole journey took anywhere from 2 to 4 years, roughly, this first missionary journey of Paul. We read it and we think it was really, really fast. Oh, he stopped here and did this. He stopped there and did this. No. There was a lot of time that elapsed in these areas. So after establishing these churches in Iconium and Antioch and stuff, which they'd done on their way out through their evangelistic preaching, obviously the church had continued. The body of believers had continued to meet and to pray. Imagine what they talked about. Oh, how could Paul leave them like that? How could he do that without sending the seminary graduate there? Because they belong to the Lord. Not to Paul and not to any seminary. And the Spirit of God working in the people that had given their lives to the Lord and been baptized in His name, and now they're meeting in fellowship, and they don't have any resources, they don't have anything, but they are faithful to the God that they know saved them. So on a return journey, Paul is encouraging them. Can you imagine what that meant? Imagine what that must have felt like to Paul to go back and to see that, wow, that small group of 30 people in Iconium that had received the Lord, and we had prayed for them, and we had baptized them, and we had said, remain steadfast in the Lord. And then we moved on. Now we're back in Iconium, and that 30 is now 75. How could they do it without the Bible? How could they do it without seminary graduates? How could all of this take place without anybody trained in there to accomplish the purpose? And yet, here it was. Can you imagine how that must have blessed the heart of Paul? To come back after so long and to see that they were continuing with the ministry that he had shared with them and the Lord had taken hold of them for? The vision that they had been given? Let me tell you something, having lived in the mission field, having worked for years and years out there, I can't tell you what it's like to do the same thing. We didn't do the evangelistic part, whether it was in Belize, in Mozambique, or in Nepal, or Thailand. We didn't do any of those because it had already been done. My role, as you guys know, was to go in and provide the discipleship. You see, the churches were established there. It's their responsibility to evangelize their people, not ours. Ours is to make sure that they remain steadfast in the faith and hold on to that faith that was once delivered to them. That's what we have to do. That's why we go. And it's amazing when you go in here and you see these people that have become believers and they're there to listen to you, teach them about the Word of God and help them to understand that. And then you go away for a year, sometimes because of it's so difficult to get there, you're gone a couple of years. But then you go back and who is waiting for you? The same people with the big smile, still can't speak your English. Still can't communicate, but you know, you just know. And I'm telling you how blessed that is in your heart. What an awesome thing it is for us to go back to Belize to see that the work we did there just didn't disintegrate. Oh yeah, it's had its problems, of course. Why do I always think ministry, successful ministry doesn't have problems? The reason it has problems is because it's successful. If it doesn't have problems, you should probably take a look at it again. Why would there be any opposition to something that really isn't doing what God has asked it to do? No, opposition comes when God is at work amidst His people. But to go back and to see those people, to encourage them. We'll be going down in August and starting to do what I did in Mozambique last time with the whole of the book and start pointing them towards the oral teaching. We're going to go down there. Emerson has asked to train the teachers before the school year starts. And we're going to go in there and we're going to teach these guys, Zelda and all of the rest of them, so that they could start using this method for their day-to-day devotions within the classroom. Our team did it when they were there, took on that the whole kind of oral thing within the classroom setting. I mean, this is exciting stuff, man. And then later on in January, Denny and Sandra will go and we'll expand that and really solidify it. But I know exactly what Paul is doing here, and I know exactly why. And I know what it feels like. It's amazing. He returns to Lystra, Iconium, strengthening the souls of disciples and exhorting them to continue in the faith. Again, not in Paul, but in the faith. And notice what he says to them. They had all heard the stories of what had taken place in all of the other cities, certainly in Lystra. And you got to continue in the faith, and we must, through many tribulations, enter the kingdom of heaven. Now, this is written in the English terribly, because it sounds like we still need to enter into the kingdom. The church is the initiate part. Remember, God is building his kingdom like a building, Paul told us. But the kingdom is yet to come. This makes it sound in the English like it's something that we got to strive for. No, no. What it's actually saying is that remember that because of the kingdom, you must endure many tribulations. In other words, the world is hostile to the kingdom of God. If you haven't figured that out yet, we need to talk. Okay? That's just the way it is. And that's what he's saying. Now, if you live in these places, again, without a Bible, without a church building, without all of the stuff that we have, without even a leadership to oversee this, and you've just been left by Paul because he shared the gospel and then he moved on to the next city. I mean, this is amazing. And then all of a sudden, this group of people that's now 75 is saying, wow, well, I don't know if I want to do this or not. Did you hear what happened to Paul over there? What if that happens to us? You see, this was important for Paul. You see, when God builds his kingdom on the earth, he's building it in the midst of the kingdom of darkness. If you think the kingdom of darkness is going to let you work without opposition, you're nuts. It's not going to happen. He's going to throw everything he can at you. He's not going to allow us to continue to build the kingdom, but that's precisely what we're doing. And then in verse 23, of course, so when they had appointed elders in every city, in every church, and prayed with fasting, they commended them to the Lord. Notice, to the Lord in whom they had believed. Paul didn't commend them to himself. He commended them to the Lord because it was the Lord that was at work within these. And so he appoints elders. Now, this is an interesting word, and I'm not going to bore you with all of the details, but that word appointed, again in the English, we think that it has to do with laying hands. And it does at times mean that, but there's a slight difference in the way the word is written in the original language. This here literally is made up of two words, to stretch forth and hand. So to stretch forth the hand. So what it is believed here, because pastors were not involved here that yet, because this was just elders, there wasn't people ready to teach. There were just people that were going to continue and oversee this thing. That's why they appointed. So they did this by stretching out their hands, and it was kind of a show with all the church that they were recognizing that these guys who had sort of floated to the top and been obvious that this is a leader. We always think that leaders take on this role of leadership because we appoint them or because we ordain them. That's completely opposite of what Scripture teaches. People lead not because they're appointed. They lead because they're called. And you don't have to discover who the leaders are. It's obvious. They don't even realize they're leading. They're just doing it. It's just obvious. It's taking place. So all of a sudden, the person is not an elder and an overseer and functioning in this, in these roles because all of a sudden they've earned some position, so they now get to wear a name tag around. No, they're already people that are involved. They're already involved in what's happening, what's taking place. Their leadership and their calling is evident for everybody to see. That's what's happening here. These guys, while Paul was away, and obviously after Paul had left, these are the guys that the group of believers had said, you know what, we really recognize these guys as kind of holding this thing all together. Paul said, amen, man, let's pray for them. And then they fasted and they prayed and they commended them to the Lord. I love that, commended them to the Lord. They didn't trust anybody else, not committed to one another, not committed to the church, certainly as we've already said, not committed to Paul and Barnabas, but committed to the Lord. It's the Lord that builds this church. I will build my church, Jesus said. He didn't say he needs anybody's help. He said, I will build my church. This is the church. He's building his church. Isn't it amazing how he doesn't need us to accomplish his purposes? And yet we're so sure that we're vitally important to him. It's amazing, right? Oh, God is so lucky to have me. I don't know what he would do if I wasn't here. Are you serious, man? So these guys had absolute confidence, not just in the believers, and especially those that had risen to leadership within the fellowship, but they had absolute confidence that the Lord would accomplish his purpose. Now, if Paul had gone back many years later, would this have looked like Paul, what Paul maybe thought it looked like? Not necessarily. You see, we think churches, and we're really guilty of this in Calvary, that churches around the world should look like Calvary's. Jesus didn't say, and I will build my Calvary chapels. He said, I'll build my church. And it may not look like what we expect it to look like. Wow, well, we're doing all of this stuff in our church. We got men's fellowship, we got women's, we got children's ministry, we got this, and we're going out in ministry. Well, this little African church here, all they're doing is getting together and praying all the time. Well, that can't be a church. Yeah, we do that all the time. Oh, we've got to make them a ministry like ours. And so we try to make all of these cookie cutter. I'm reading in the other box, just in case you're wondering. Cookie cutter churches out there in these congregations. And if they don't look and sound like us, well, then they're just not good. We were guilty of this when I first went into Belize. I was ministering to these guys out of the bush, way out of the bush, and ministering to them and where the Maya are. And went in there because I was young and I was new to the mission field. I didn't know. And I went out there, and the stuff that I had been taught, I thought, wow, this will be really good to pass on to these guys. You see, I'm an American, inductive Bible study, observation, interpretation, application. You know, the three-step approach and all of these things. And it just made sense to me. So I thought, well, I'm going to go out there and show this, guys. And I would be out there teaching this stuff, and it was months before I figured this out. And they will never tell you no. And I was teaching, and I had made this old nasty, because in those days, it was a lot rougher than it is now for the teams to go out there, trust me, in those days. But, and I had made this old beat up piece of wood, and I had painted it with black flat paint, so I could use it as a chalkboard, and set it up out in these villages. And we'd open the windows of these thatch roof, dirt floor churches, and all the kids in the neighborhood would come, and they'd stand in the windows because there was a big fat white guy in town, and I was shocking. So we'd stand there, we'd minister to them, and I remember trying to teach them these principles, and they do speak English, you know, pretty much. It is their basic language. And I'd write this stuff down, and it just made perfect sense. Oh, an observation, this is what you want to do. You want to pay attention, you want to be prayerful, you want to blah, blah, you know, you see all of this stuff. And I would write all of this stuff down, and it's just making all the sense in the world, but I'm looking out there, and they look like you guys. And I'm like, well, this is easy stuff to understand. And so I kept trying to reinforce what I was doing. And then I don't even remember how it happened. And all of you know what we called this training? To Mayan pastors out in these villages with dirt floors. At that time, no electricity, no cell phones, nothing. I mean, it was out there. We called it the Institute for Pastoral Training, which was cool, a great sound, right? IPT. Institute for Pastoral Training. That's what we called it. And I just ended up changing it to just meeting with the guys in the villages. Because that's what ended up happening. And I started to realize this isn't working. So instead of trying to put out my perspective, and then they always wanted me to play guitar. And I'd bring out there and I'd play the songs we just played on my acoustic guitar. I'd play them out there. And they were like kind of lost. I mean, they kind of got it, but they didn't really get it. And then they would say, well, I could play guitar. They'd play a little three-chord kind of a Latin kind of a thing. And I'd go, well, no, it's really not like that. It's like this. And before I realized what I was trying to do, or what I was going to do, I wasn't trying. I wasn't trying to make it. I just was. I didn't realize it. And one day I went out there, and Pastor Juan and Santa Teresa, and they're out there in their meeting. We had gone out there for something, I don't remember what, and they're singing their songs, and we walk up, and the whole church is singing, and the children are laughing, and it's just nuts. It was awesome. And I walked up, and they said, oh, Pastor Rick is here. Pastor Rick, would you come up and play for us? I'm like, no stinking way am I going up there. You keep doing what you're doing, because this is the church. You don't need me. And it was such a blessing, and I demanded it change everything for me. So now when I go to Mozambique and I'm speaking to the Shitswa or any of the other groups that we minister to and stuff like that, I try to remember this and not bring my American mindset to the table. Because they'll say they understand. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Oh, yes, we understand. And you know, dang good, it's like you're talking to your kids. You know what I'm saying? Yes. They don't think and know. They don't know anything. And by the way, how come when a great-grandchild is born, Marie still looks young and there's nothing said about me? I was thinking about that. Man, dude. Hey, so anyway. Yeah, pretty much.
She's prettier than you
Well, yeah, that I can't argue with that. A lot. Yeah, and I seem to like be expanding and thinning. So anyways, so what did we hear? Where did you hear that thing last night? Overweight people, what was that? Don't knock overweight. How was it? Come on, Krista, we're waiting. The sermon, you're on my time here. Yeah, something about don't be afraid to lose weight and get heavy because heavy people are less likely to be kidnapped. There you go. I knew that. So I've been working on it for years. Yeah, that's right. So when they had appointed elders and prayed, they commended them to the Lord in which they had believed. Now here's where we're at now. So they've gone all the way out. I'm going to do both sides here. Don't worry. So this is the journey out, evangelism to Derby. Now they're turned around on the blue route, returning, and discipleship is now taking place. Okay? So this is the route that's going. Now that journey right there, what we call the first missionary journey, which in the chapters you can see here, whoops, took from roughly 44 to 46 AD. So we believe it to be that long. So do you guys need the thing, or did you see that? I can do it for you if you want. I know you're on the opposite box side. No, you guys are on the right side. You guys are on the wrong side. Anyway, so you get it? Okay, so anyway, so that's the first mission here. So and after they had passed through Pisidia, they came to Pamphylia. And now when they had preached the word in Perga, gee, it seems like there's always preaching. Yeah, you think? That's why they were out there. When they had preached the word in Perga, then they went down to Attalia. And from there they sailed to Antioch, so this is the complete journey now, where they had been commended to the grace of God for the work which they had what? Completed. Everything that had occurred during this period of time, and by the way, it was in Perga that Mark, for whatever reason, left them alone and decided, I can go no further. And he left them standing. That's where that all took place. So in the midst of all of this that's going on, they had finished the work that God completed. So wait a minute, to finish the work of God means you're going to have to stand up to hostility? Yeah. We always, in an American church, we think that everything should just be easy to finish the work of God. And we know that God is working if what we're saying is just being accepted by the masses and the churches are growing and this is what we equate. But they completed the work that God had given them. And yet they were opposed every place they went. Paul was stoned, probably to death. They had been abandoned. They had done all of this stuff. But I love that phrase that they had completed the work which God had given them to do. Way back in chapter 13. They had completed the task. And they had done so because the Holy Spirit had initially said to the church at Antioch, set apart for me Paul and Barnabas. Notice he did not say Mark. Set apart for me Paul and Barnabas for the work which I've called them. That work that they called, this is the last part of it. Now what's interesting about this is they made that journey backwards. If I had the slide back up there, what you would see is they could have from Derby, they could have very easily gone from Derby down to Paul's home city where his family was in Tarsus and then gone over some mountains and dropped right into Antioch. But then they wouldn't have completed the work that the Spirit gave them to do. So they backtracked and on the discipleship tour, and that's what they did. Now when they had come and gathered the church together, they reported all that God had done with them. You never know why we always give the pulpit to people that are coming back from the field to share? Right there. Right there. And do you know what's interesting? I understand where I'm coming from with this. All of the missionaries that have come to our church, you guys know this, they come and they always ask because we were missionaries and we know. And I cannot tell you how many times we were back from the field with all of our stuff. And remember, in those days, you didn't have the fancy slideshows and all of that stuff. But we would go to the churches and they would want to hear it from us. Because the churches that we'd gone to were teams that had visited all over the U.S., in particular the South, all the way across. And we get to the church and they'd bring us in, the people that had been on the team, to meet the pastor. I mean, this is our first opportunity to meet the pastor of these churches. And the pastor would come in and he'd say, we're so glad to have you. We're just so excited to hear what God is saying. And I'm not making fun of these guys. Please don't misunderstand. Okay, but this is what happened over and over and over and over again. We're so excited to hear from you. Now listen, at this time, so-and-so is going to give you the sign for you to stand up. You have 4 minutes. Okay, I'm sorry, but you can only have 4 minutes. So, you know, and we're like, I thought you wanted to hear what God was doing. But this happened over and over and over again. And the bigger churches would send us off with a blessing, financial support, I'm not complaining, but this is true, would send us off with a $25, $50 check. The little churches, like Calvary Mesquite, you'd walk out of the bank. They get it. Smaller churches get it. So I learned in those days that if ever, and I did not expect to be in this position, believe me, but I said in those days, if missionaries come, they have whatever time they choose. If the whole thing is what they want, they get it. If they want 5 minutes, they'll have it. They get whatever they want. You guys have to listen to me drool and slobber every week. And I can't tell you how many missionaries that we run into out there that have come here and spoken and said, do you know how unique your fellowship is? Even amongst the Calvaries. Nobody just lets us step into the pulpit, which is hard for me to understand. Did you catch that? Nobody lets us step into their pulpit. Whose pulpit? This ain't mine. Okay? It ain't. And it ain't yours either. This is the Lord's. He gets to do whatever he chooses because he's the Lord. Okay? We're going to make room for that. But that is so rare. So when they had come and gathered, but that's what's happening here, and gathered the church together, they reported all that God had done, the good, the bad, and the ugly. God had done with them, and that he had opened the door of faith to the Gentiles. Uh-oh, something has dramatically changed on the first missionary journey. The majority of the church, the original church, is about to change from being the majority Jew to being majority Gentile. And it is on fire and is about to explode. We're going to see it cause problems in the very next chapter. What are we going to do with all these Jewish or Gentile believers, the Jews are going to say? There's going to be great confusion, great conflict. But James is going to step up. Because James, unlike where Paul had appointed pastors, elders, was pastoring in Jerusalem because it was a much more established church where it needed a pastor. So they stayed there a long time with the disciples. Now, time-wise, it appears that this is anywhere from 1 year to 2 years. Now, what were they doing? They were doing what they'd done when the Spirit said, give them to me and I'm going to send them out. They were teaching the brethren in Antioch, Syria, sharing the things that God had done, telling all the missionary stories, right? You thought we were the first to do that. No, we're not the first. This is what they were doing about all the critters and all the weird stuff that they ate on the trip. See? Because those things, the reason those things are important and why we share them is because, I don't know, for me, it's to freak you out. No, I'm just kidding. It's because it's the experience. It's the adventure. When you step out in faith and do what God has asked you to do, you will be blown away by what he does. Be careful when you say, well, that's not for me. I'm not a goer, I'm a sender. Careful. Are you sure? Because there were a lot of senders that ended up being goers, and now you can't stop them from talking about going. Because God will completely change your view. I'm too old. No, you stinking ain't. You got a pulse, you're still vertical, make a trip. Well, I'm fighting with this disease. Everybody remember Marv? Marv and Dorothy? Served at the bush in Thailand for years and years with prostate cancer and fought it every step of the way and died on the mission field. Where did his wife come back? Did she come back? No, she's still there ministering. Funny. Isn't it amazing? Because God gets a hold of you when you allow him to do the unexpected in your life. The unexpected will take place and you will be blown away. I didn't know I had that in me. Well, if you'd have stayed, you didn't. But you went, and now you do. It's amazing what God does. And we are grateful for the part that he has allowed us to play and continues to let us be a part of what he's doing throughout the world. So, again, take the journeys. Now, something's going to change. Like we said, next week there's going to be some confusion about the Gentiles all entering the church. But we're going to see that after this is settled and these guys move in, the next journey, we're going to see Paul going to places that have names that we're familiar with. Because we don't have really any letters written to Lystra and Derbe and Iconium. We don't have letters written to them. But we do have letters written to the Galatians, to the Ephesians, to the Corinthians, and blah, blah, blah. We're going to start seeing those familiar names, okay, as we move through this. God is at work 2,000 years ago in these apostles in spite of the hostility. He continues to work today. The issue for you and I is, what are we going to do about it? Are we going to get wrapped up in our own little day-to-day world? Or are we going to get wrapped up in the world that leads to eternity? Where the true value is at. Amen? All right, let's stand and close in a word of prayer. We thank you guys also, as you're standing, for praying for us.